Extraordinary Terrestrials, Chapter 34, Twin Sunrises. Tripp's energy was sufficiently depleted by the time he arrived home. He was still enthusiastic about reading the journal entries, but the strange interrogation with the two mysterious professionals clouded his thoughts. The day had been long. So preoccupied was Tripp with these concerns that he didn't even notice the shining car parked in his driveway as his bike skidded to a halt. It was dark now, and perhaps a regressive part of his mind that had grown used to the presence of his father's Buick from years ago prevented him from realizing that this car did not belong. Still oblivious, he strode into his house, through the lit kitchen, into the half-lit living room, to find a sleeping Maddie on his couch. Tripp had to slap a hand over his mouth and leap back into the kitchen for fear of making his presence known. He'd almost let out a startled yelp. Pressing against the kitchen wall like the kind of spy Bud wanted to be, a hand over his pounding heart, Tripp collected himself. She had come back. He peered around the wall, just to be sure. Of course she was still there, still in a fetal curl, a single hand hanging over the edge of the couch. Tripp could almost see the twitch of a pulse in her arched wrist, almost hear her breaths. Her curls were longer. It suited her. Fred, purring and seated on the peak of Maddie's hip, blinked at him. Tripp became shamelessly aware of the wistful look he was giving his sleeping friend. He could only hope she didn't wake as he watched her shoulder rise and fall, as he listened to her nose whistle almost inaudibly. She had come back. Better than calling him, she'd returned. He couldn't help but feel some puzzlement as to why she'd felt the need to head back up here immediately but hadn't thought to call. Not once. Then Tripp remembered who this person was. "Classic Maddie," he murmured. She stirred and he dodged back into the kitchen, ecstatic and terrified. He had to do something, for her, to show how grateful he was of her return. Not too grateful, he reminded himself. It would be tactless to show how truly glad he was to see her again. Damn glad. He gave her another glance. She was still dressed for spring in Louisiana, and he could make out the goosebumps on her arms and legs. Tripp tiptoed to the couch and delicately placed an afghan over his shivering friend. She shifted again, but still did not wake. Either she was exhausted, or all her talk in the past of being a light sleeper was fiction. Tripp wouldn't put it past her to make up such a thing. He returned to the kitchen and opened the fridge. She'd wake up eventually, and when she did, she would be hungry. He couldn't be sure of the math, but she likely had set off shortly after getting his message, which left little time for stops. It must have been a maddeningly long drive. A drive fit for an omelet. Four small feet hit the hardwood floor. A meow. Maddie woke with a start, realizing immediately the flaw in her plan. Tripp had been arrested. He wouldn't be coming back to his house while arrested. She couldn't sleep while he was under arrest. She had to bail him out. She leapt off the couch, barely noticing the change in lighting or the blanket that she hadn't placed on herself. It clung to her shoulders like the cape of a superhero until she reached the kitchen, where she halted. The blanket fell to her feet. There was Tripp, a deer in headlights at the stove, frying something that smelled delicious. "Trip!" she cried, swooping in for a hug. It was as they embraced that Maddie remembered Trip had never been much of a hugger. It surprised her then how natural and pleasant this hug felt. Long awaited. Her cheeks became hot as she withdrew. The awkwardness struck when she took a step back and tried to remember the first thing on the list of millions of things she wanted to tell him. "How are you?" she managed. He looked well, other than tired. Maddie couldn't be sure if the bags under his eyes were from many cumulative nights or more recent events. His normally tidy hair stuck out in several directions, indicating a recent bike ride, and he still wore his work attire. He hadn't been home long. Maddie's eyes were quickly drawn from his face to the omelet he was cooking, then to his shoulders, then to the omelet, and back to his face. "I'm great," he replied, then looked down at his task. Though, to be frank, a little annoyed.
"Why is that?"
Maddie knew why. She also knew he could only be so annoyed. He gave her a pointed look, then returned his attention to the eggs.
"And you should be annoyed," she said quickly. "I've been a terrible friend."
"Not terrible," Tripp stated, flipping the omelet. "Just absent and neglectful."
"I'm sorry."
Maddie leaned over the stove, attempting to catch Tripp's eyes. Tripp seemed intent on not letting her succeed.
"I needed to be home to feel safe for a bit. The whole business with Karen, I felt I had to escape.
And then the escape turned into 8 or 9 months. She prayed Tripp wouldn't ask why she never felt inclined to answer his calls or messages in those months. He did not ask. Perhaps he knew why. All the more reason to love him for it.
"And then I heard your message," she continued, "about Karen and being maybe arrested?"
"Yeah, that was a bit of a misunderstanding," Tripp started to guiltily protest. Maddie interrupted with a laugh.
"Good!"
She rubbed her arms, realizing she was wearing shorts and a thin t-shirt in New England in April.
"Anyway, that's why I'm here now, shivering in your kitchen."
"And why I gave you the Afghan." Tripp gestured with a spatula at the crocheted blanket gathered around her ankles. His eyes and the spatula lingered.
"Thank you," she replied as she rewrapped herself. "Didn't realize how much less I could do with my family until I left."
Tripp teased her with a subtle gasp of shock for saying such an unkind thing about her own family. She grinned.
"And how much I missed here, of course," she confessed.
She spun around in the kitchen, taking in the familiar scene. Maddie had been in Tripp's house countless times and considered it a comfortable haven. Its oldness often reminded her of her family home, though every detail was a signature of Tripp's presence. The precarious stacks of books, the random slips of paper with random thoughts written on them, a receipt with the words "Dark Triad" scrawled on it. An envelope for a bill with doodles of a map of an unknown place. There were doors in Tripp's house that were too small for human adults. They advertised as cupboards, but really opened to tiny passages under the stairs and overhangs. The dust that had gathered in corners and hung from the old beams would dance lightly whenever there was a strong wind outside. It all made Maddie think of her friend's cryptic, wise mind. "Well, you were very much missed in your absence," Tripp stated quietly. "Churchy will be thrilled to know his girlfriend is back."
"Oh, goodness. So he's still 82?
83 now, actually.
"Funny how that happens,"
Maddie said, examining either a sea sponge or a very dirty dish sponge.
"Well, you can tell him that I even missed him. Or I can tell him."
"When, or how long are you here for?" She could hear the caution in his voice. He was still concerned that this was just a visit. Something soft rubbed against her leg, and she noticed Fred giving her the same inquiry with her green eyes. "For good," she stated, bending down to pet the cat. Fred rose to meet her hand with an over-affectionate headbutt.
"I'll be back in school next fall. What do you suppose I should major in this time?"
"Beats me." His thoughts were still on something else. He peered out the kitchen window. Is that your car out there?
Yeah, well, in a way. The short story is, my brother doesn't leave his bedroom enough for it to be considered his vehicle anymore, Maddie explained. She took a seat at the kitchen table and watched hungrily as Tripp plated the omelet and started on another. Another thing, I have nowhere to stay until I get an apartment.
You have my couch, Tripp interrupted, for whenever you need it. I'd offer the guest room, but the mattress was sold years ago.
I appreciate it, Tripp. Maddie didn't know why she was relieved. She didn't know why she'd expected this reunion to be more difficult. It was always easy with Tripp. Maybe not always. I'll be out of your hair soon enough, I promise.
Maddie. Tripp turned to face her. You're never in my hair.
Good, because I've been told I'm not very good for follicle health, she fired back.
Mushrooms or bacon? He asked, plating the second omelet.
Both.
Correct. That was a trick question. Tripp handed her a plate. Your mushroom and bacon omelet.
And that's exactly why I came back. You're the best, Maddie stated, immediately digging in. Enough of my news or lack thereof. What in the hell have you been getting yourself into?
Tripp sat down across from her, slowly relaxing. He shook his head, the universal signal of someone who has resigned themselves to never expecting anything normal ever again. Where to start, he said.
So our next step is to visit Karen, Maddie declared an hour or so later.
Now wrapped in a much larger blanket, she'd parked herself in a lawn chair across the fire from Tripp. They sat in his backyard, as they had on many other occasions. They'd only just gotten the fire going and the air was cold. Steam fluttered from her lips as she spoke. Tripp had the brief vision of Maddie exuding her own smoke from a fire burning inside of her. He took a deep breath and let it out, thinking of all the chemicals in his own exhaled vapor. He'd written it down somewhere. 78% nitrogen, 18% oxygen, 4% carbon dioxide.
What was that about? Maddie asked, amused.
Hmm?
That long sigh.
Oh. Tripp returned to the present. He gave another, more dramatic sigh, and rested his chin in his hand like a melancholy poet. I wanted to see my own breath, he quietly confessed. Maddie laughed, which was exactly what Tripp hoped she'd do.
I should have known, she said. What was I saying?
We should visit Karen, Tripp picked up, remembering somehow. But the thing is, I don't know if we can.
Because she's locked up in the hospital? Maddie waved a hand in dismissal. Small potatoes, we can find a way in. You say you know one of the nurses, yeah? Someone's grandma?
Bud's.
Who's Bud again?
He's the kid I... Tripp frowned, just realizing it. I think I babysat him today. I think that's what that was. Phil even paid me. Maddie raised her eyebrows. He's 8. Tripp added, as if it explained everything.
So his grandmother works in the hospital, and...
And his grandfather is Corporal Hadlock, who I'm sure you...
I recall, Maddie nodded. So we have some connections in the Hadlock family, it seems.
What are you scheming? Tripp asked, already sensing something diabolical in her tone.
Nothing yet.
They fell into a silence, and Tripp realized how happy he felt. He noticed it because he hadn't felt this happy in a long time. He'd always believed happiness was a decision one made, a choice to feel happy. He now wondered if it was simply something one forgot to notice but was ever present. Well, ever present now. He didn't want to pin it all on her, but Maddie was his number one cause for current happiness. Once, Tripp had almost told her he loved her. Then she left for 10 months, He now knew the key to keeping Maddie in his company and keeping his own happiness was to never tell her he loved her. That was sure to keep things in this pleasant stasis. But it was a paradox. Tripp knew that maintaining the pleasant stasis was impossible. One day he would have to burden her with this truth. He could see it all pan out already. She would see him differently. She would be disappointed that he would ruin their valued friendship this way. And she would leave. She'd have every reason to. That, and he was still mad at her for leaving for so long. The more time in her company, the more Tripp realized that that was what it was. Anger. She didn't seem to understand the gravity of her actions, how she'd abandoned him all those months. Not a word of affirmation. Just like that, Tripp's thoughts went from warm reds to cold blues. He noticed new things, impossibilities sprouting up, causing unhappiness. He reminded himself that those things were down the road and that he should enjoy Maddie's presence while she was here, illuminated by the orange flames, the dark shapes of his wooded yard as her backdrop, her shining eyes reflecting like sunrises, her hair the curling neon clouds around the horizon. Extraordinary Terrestrials is written, read, and recorded by Miriam Runkunis. All piano music was written and performed by Jonas Runkunis. All public domain organ music was performed by John Runkunis. All other music was written and performed by Miriam Runkunis. Needless to say, all rights reserved. Tune in every Thursday for the next chapter. The Mockingbird heard at the beginning of this chapter was recorded in New Jersey by free sound user Hargis Sound. A link to their recording is in the show notes. If you like what you hear, please leave ratings and reviews for Extraordinary Terrestrials on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or SoundCloud. You can also follow the podcast and tell your friends on Facebook and Twitter, as well as the website, extraordinaryterrestrialspodcast.com. Lastly, go outside! If you're anything like the host of Extraordinary Terrestrials, it's possible you have a mild obsession with fire. Be it a bog fire, a bonfire, or a fire pit, it is a compelling force of nature. And while yours truly does not endorse arson, there's nothing wrong with a little bit of controlled, safe pyromania. With an emphasis on the word safe. That's why this summer, as you're contemplating a fire pit for your backyard party or occult ceremony, be sure to check out the Wildland Fire Assessment System at WFAS.net. There you can find out the risks of having a fire in your region and determine if it is a good idea to roast those marshmallows and kebabs, or maybe save that party for next month. At the very least, go outside! Thanks for listening.